Coming up on today's show.
And I said to her, you know what? You're some kind of wonderful. I said, I'm going to write a song about you. So when we left Rochester and I ate the lunch that she had packed for me, I started writing on the bag.
My name is John Ellison, and my greatest wish is that the world can live in peace and harmony. And if I had just had one wish, I would change the world. If I had just one wish.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you are welcome to DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from right here in Tampa, Florida, my guest wrote the R&B standard Some Kind of Wonderful and is still today singing, writing songs, and playing guitar. He earned a Grammy nomination for Male Vocalist of the Year, and he received no fewer than 5 BMI Lifetime Achievement Awards, was inducted into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame, is about to be inducted into the Rochester, New York Music Hall of Fame, and received 3 Canadian Lifetime Achievement Awards. He has played with, written for, and performed alongside the likes of Nina Simone, James Brown, The Temptations, Wilson Pickett, Grand Funk Railroad, Huey Lewis and the News, Buddy Guy, Joss Stone, and more. In late January, he released a 12-song album, and you have been hearing a song from that release, a track called If I Had Just One Wish. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, John Ellison.
Bruce, it's nice to be on your show. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, John. Thank you. Let's get started by having you share first about the song of yours that was just playing during the intro called If I Had Just One Wish.
Well, what inspired that song was actually Donald Trump. And the reason I got the inspiration to write that song is because I don't like his views. I don't respect him. I don't think much of him. And because I'm a person, I'm all about love and treating everyone with respect. And I don't feel that he does that. So the song, that's why the lyrics are, if I had just one wish, this is what it would be. I'd wish the whole world could live in peace and harmony. There'd be no more wars. There'd be no more hate. I'd make this world a better place. I'd make this world great if I had just one wish. And as they say, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Isn't that the beauty of songwriting, though, is it does give a creative outlet for beliefs, for opinions, for something that you feel strongly about, as opposed to the average listener that I guess the outlet for them is social media.
Exactly. And I'm a person that I respect everyone, and I feel this world is lacking love.
So when you got that idea for that song, are you primarily lyrics first and melody second? How did that song come together?
Well, it depends on the song that I'm writing. With this particular song, the lyrics came first, and the music, I wanted to give it a reggae beat and something that people could really feel when they're listening to the lyrics, and it gives you a nice vibe for moving.
Hmm. Well, congratulations on the album itself. As I mentioned in the intro, it was just released at the end of January and has 12 songs on it. Share with the audience all about that project. Where was it recorded? Who you worked on it with? All the details.
I recorded the tracks in Toronto, Canada. Hmm. I worked with a longtime friend of mine who owns a studio there. It's called Wellesley Sounds Studio. It's owned by Jeff McCullough. He's a great guitarist as well, and I love any time I do recording, I do it in Toronto because I love the vibes in the studio and the collaboration that we have together. And I sent all the tracks to Amsterdam because I'm signed with a record label there, and they did the finishing touch on it.
How long have you had the Amsterdam connection?
I was performing in Italy in 2016, and there was a gentleman that approached me. He'd been a longtime fan of Soul Brother Six, which I was lead singer and songwriter for back in the day. He loved all of the songs that I had written. He could not say enough great things about my songwriting. And he asked me if I would be willing to do some recording for his label. And so we collaborated on things, and I wound up doing it in Toronto, and the songs were finished in Amsterdam and released from Europe.
Okay, now you just brought up a good point that is a potential teaching moment for any young people who are listening. That, John, they get started in the business and somebody comes up to them and expresses the interest that you just indicated that you went through. So, what is your advice to those people? Because it's very easy when you're young and someone shows a great interest and says, "You're really talented, I'd like to work with you." Unfortunately, there's so many shysters out there that really just want to take your money and they're telling everybody that they think they're great and they'd love to collaborate with them. So, how would you recommend to these young people who are getting approached by these people to know whether the person is genuinely interested or if they're just trying to pad their bank account?
Well, what I would suggest to anyone that's going into this business, because it is a business, and you need to know all the ins and outs regarding registering your music. First, you must copyright your music, make sure that it's copywritten, make sure that you are signed with, for example, BMI as a songwriter or either ASCAP. And the next thing, what you need to do is have a publishing company, start your own publishing company. So, a lot of artists back in the day, they get trapped because someone comes up to you, "Oh, wow, you're great. I'd love to record you." But they don't realize that that is a way that they can lose all the rights to the music if it's not protected. I am one of the fortunate ones. Not that I was so smart when I first started recording, but I was fortunate enough to meet someone that was honest. And they showed me the ropes, how to protect myself, how to receive residuals from my songwriting and my publishing. So that's why I have been blessed and I've never had to have a day job, because I've only punched a time clock about a year and a half out of my life. That's when I was a teenager, and I've lived off of my music, my royalties.
Well, and typically the formula is that songs get written, an album gets recorded, and the artist goes out on tour to promote that new release before coming back home, taking a little break, and then starting that process all over again. So now that it's out, are you, in fact, John, touring to promote this new album? And if so, how far will you be traveling to perform, and over what period of time will you be doing live shows in support of this latest recording project?
Well, number one, I have never stopped performing. I don't perform as much as I did in the past. But because I have a new release, I will be doing some European shows.
Wow.
That's mostly the areas that I perform in. It's mostly in Europe. I do Italy, France, Germany, Austria. My music is well respected, and I have quite a few fans in Europe. That was the reason I was on a UK interview yesterday, because my song is really going up the charts right now in Europe, in the UK.
And so, is there a formal tour schedule that's already out there where the listeners in Europe can go to look and see when you're coming over there?
Not at the moment, because what I'm doing also, I just signed a motivational speaking contract. And I am more excited about doing the motivational speaking engagements, which I have ones scheduled for May 10th, one for May 12th. I'm also going to Oklahoma to do one, and I think it's in June. I am also receiving another Lifetime Achievement Award from BMI on June 25th in my home state of West Virginia. And it's also a motivational speaking engagement as well. So I'm more excited now about, which is also promoting my album.
Sure.
Doing the motivational speaking.
Yeah, but it sounds like from what you're saying that it doesn't make sense to be heading to Europe right away, because you would just need to be coming back for all these speaking engagements and the BMI event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, over my more than 10 years of doing this show every week, I have been fortunate to get listeners from 163 countries around the world. And as much as I'm sure that the absolute overwhelming majority of them are, or darn well should be, familiar with the song Some Kind of Wonderful, I don't want to assume that everyone knows your backstory. So let's start digging into that. For openers, did you come from a musical family? And for that matter, was music a part of your family's history?
Well, my father played guitar, but he didn't play professionally. Mm-hmm. My father was a coal miner. I grew up in West Virginia. My father worked in the coal mines. My mother was a housemaid. My mother sang in church. My father played guitar only on the weekends, some weekends, when he felt like picking up the guitar. And but at age 13, I became very interested in music. And I picked up my father's guitar one day to see if I could play it. Lo and behold, I found it very easy. So I taught myself at age 13 to play the guitar, and I started writing songs. At that age, I entered a contest when I was 14 at my school, and I won. I played a song by Chuck Berry called School Days, and that was an instant hit. Everybody loved it. And from that point on, I had the bug. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to do anything else. And so I set my mind on pursuing a career in music. Because of where I was, everyone said I was crazy. And my father, after he found out I was serious, he became annoyed and at what I was trying to do. And every time I would pick up the guitar, he would make me put it down and go do some work. I dropped out of school at age 16 because we were very poor, and my father was having difficulty getting steady work, because he would work for a while in one mine. That mine would shut down because it would run out of coal, and then he would have to try to find work other places. So I dropped out of school at 16, started working at a hotel from 11 o'clock at night to 7 in the morning.
Wow.
7 nights a week. And all the money that I earned, I gave it to my parents.
Wow. Well, let me jump in with a couple of follow-up questions based on some of the things that I just heard. So your mother was singing in church, and I also heard you say that you played Chuck Berry when you performed at school. I don't know what kind of music your father was playing, but what had you been listening to? I imagine it must have been Chuck Berry and music like that, because I was initially influenced by you saying that your mother sang in church. But what had you been listening to as a young boy?
As a young boy, the only music that was available for us to listen to was like Ricky Nelson, Elvis Presley. I listened to a lot of doo-wop music back then. But it wasn't church music. It was,
okay.
Like I said, Jerry Lee Lewis.
But in other words, up until 13, when you decided to start playing the guitar, even though you had been listening to music, you weren't necessarily interested in doing anything other than listening to it, it sounds like.
Exactly. I didn't want to do anything else except play music. My whole thing was because my idea, what was in my head was, if you're a singer, you are rich. You make money. It was an easy life. So I could not wait to get out of West Virginia because West Virginia was, I was surrounded by poverty. Just to give you an example, when my father was working, he was only earning $600 a year.
Oh, boy.
And he had six boys, and we were very, very poor. You have no idea,
Well,
but I,
tell me this, though. I want to hear about singing, writing songs, and playing the guitar as it relates to how you learned each of those crafts. Because back then, there was no such thing as YouTube. There was no such thing as the internet where you could go online and teach yourself, as is so common today. So, what age were you when you started singing? What age were you when you started writing songs? When you started playing guitar, you said you were 13, but then, like I said, how did you make your way into each of those? Did you teach yourself everything?
I taught myself everything.
Wow.
Everything. Yep. I had no teacher. It came natural to me. I heard songs on the radio and I would play them. I remember I used to hear this song by Elvis go, "Well, since my baby left me, I found a new place to dwell. Down at the end of Lonely Street at Heartbreak Hotel." I learned that song, learned how to play it. Same thing with "Good Golly, Miss Molly." You know, all of the songs that I was listening on the radio, I could play them. I would pick up the guitar, and it was as easy as talking for me.
Wow,
And I
wow.
started writing my own songs, and like I said, that's what annoyed my parents because I just tuned out everything else except music.
So as the years went along and your music career got underway, did you ever at some point say, okay, now I can afford to take some voice lessons, or now I can afford to take some guitar lessons, or was it, I didn't need it, I had been doing it long enough?
I have never taken any kind of lesson in my life.
Wow.
I have a God-given talent for writing, for teaching myself how to play the guitar, and for singing. I have never had any kind of lessons at all.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And I do want to reset in the meantime and say that I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from right here in Tampa, Florida, by legendary singer, songwriter, guitar player John Ellison. Visit his official website at johnellisonmusic.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. As you heard, his new album, titled Some Kind of Wonderful by John Ellison and Soul Brothers 6, is out and can be purchased digitally from Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. In the music section of johnellisonmusic.com, you will see a link that will take you to a page that will take you over to not only Apple Music, but Spotify, SoundCloud, and Amazon as well. At the top of his official website, look for links to follow John on social media, specifically Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Keep up with John online for details on where and when you can go see him perform live and maybe even one of his motivational speeches. I have an important update for you as it relates to something I usually talk about here every week. You always hear me talking about the Owl app. And by the way, please remember that they are not a sponsor. They're not paying me to talk about them. I've just really had a good experience with their app, and I feel that it will benefit you too as it relates to opportunities to connect with people who can help you in your career, almost regardless of whatever industry you're in. Anyhow, thanks to a new website, I need to point you in a little different direction as to where to find all the details that I wrote online about this. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click News in the website menu, the navigation options at the top. And from there, look for the article entitled Help Now a Phone App Call Away. That will tell you more about Owl. Plus, there's not only links to download it for free from the App Store or Google Play, but you will see my invitation code, which is a required field as you're setting it up on your phone. And then call me through there and let's talk about this show, about podcasting in general, about the music industry, or whatever you would like or need to discuss. I look forward to hearing from you through OWL. That is like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. John, people are going to hear all about your awards. They'll think about all the success that the song Some Kind of Wonderful has had over the years. But away from all that, there is a part of your life that you spent in the coal fields of West Virginia. Can you tell us about those days?
Sure. Well, during those early days of my life, I've always been a person, number one, I look at everybody as being equal. Unfortunately, during my period growing up in West Virginia, as you, I'm sure you are aware of, there was segregation. You know, I was never allowed in a restaurant when I was living there. And I had some negative experiences. One, when I first entered a contest, well, prior to me entering this contest in West Virginia, I was working from 11 o'clock at night, as I mentioned before, to 7 in the morning, mm-hmm. 7 nights a week. And I would take my guitar to work. And in the wee hours of the morning, when there was, it was quiet, I would sit and I would practice with my guitar. So one morning, after I finished work, I went to the bus station to take a bus home, as I did every day. And I had my guitar with me. There were some girls that came through the bus terminal on their way to school. They were white. And one saw me with the guitar, and they asked me if I could play. And I said, sure. And they said, well, can you play us a song? And me being the young, eager person to let somebody hear me sing and play, I said, of course. Not thinking of anything except I was just going to sing, you know. So I take my guitar out of my case and I start singing. And these girls, they really, they loved it. They just, they were clapping and making a commotion. And the bus station manager heard what was going on and he looked out and he called the police.
What?
Yes, he called the police. So the police came and the police said, what are you doing? And I said, they asked me to play the guitar. He said, get out of the bus station now. He said, unplug this guitar. And he, well, he swore. I'm not going to say the words he swore. But anyway, he told me to take my guitar and get out. And so I started to put it back in the case, and he kicked me.
Mm.
And he grabbed my guitar, and he broke it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm, at the time, I was 16 years old. So he kicked me and pushed me out of the door. And I stood outside. I mean, I was, you know, I'm a young boy. I was angry. And so he came outside about 5 minutes later, and I was still standing out there. And he said, well, I guess that'll teach you on it.
Hmm.
And I said to him, I said, if you put your hands on me again, one of us going to die. He said, what? I said, you heard me. Touch me again, and one of us going to leave this world. Either you or me, because I'll kill you. And I think, you know, God was watching over me because, you know, I didn't have anything to kill anybody with.
Yeah.
But I was that angry.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he was so shocked, he called for backup.
Mm.
And the three other police officers came and they arrested me. They put me in jail. I stayed in jail for about several hours. My boss came from the hotel, and he got me out. And he said to me, you need to apologize to this officer. And I said, for what? I said, he broke my guitar, and he kicked me, and you're asking me to apologize.
Yeah.
He said, well, if you want to keep your job, you better do as I tell you to do.
Mm.
And I said, I don't owe him an apology. So they fired me.
Hmm.
And that was the first incident. Then the second incident I had was I entered a contest in Welch, West Virginia. They were saying on the radio that any contestant, whoever won the talent show, they would win $500 and a trip to New York to record.
Wow.
Well, I entered this contest, and I was the only black person in that room, and we were all sitting in the contestants' room, and as they called your name over the intercom, you would go in and do your audition. So when they called my name, everyone that went in prior to me going in, I knew I was better than they were. So when they called my name, I went in, and this one judge, he says, "Okay, what are you going to sing?" So I said, "I'm going to sing a song by Chuck Berry." So I started singing, and within 20 seconds, he was looking at me in astonishment. He said, "This contest is over. We have a winner." He told me I was great, and I walked out of the room, and as soon as they closed the door of the auditioning room, and I went back to where the contestants, they forgot to turn the intercoms off above the door. And they started arguing. And this one judge says, "What the hell do you mean we have a winner?" And so the guy said, "Well, nobody's going to be better than this guy. He's great." And the other judge said, "I don't care how good he is. He's a nigger."
Oh, my gosh.
"And there is no way we're going to let a nigger win this contest." Well, Bruce, for me, it was like someone had put a knife through me.
And how?
I never expected to hear anything like that. If I had lost because I cheated or if I wasn't good enough, I could have accepted that.
Sure.
But I lost because of something I couldn't change, which was the color of my skin. But what it did for me, it made me angry. I got teary-eyed, and I looked back, and I said, "You know what? You think you stopped me? I'm going to show you. You can't stop me." And after that incident happened with me, about a week later, I bought a one-way ticket from West Virginia to Rochester, New York, and I never looked back.
So take us to that magical day in 1967 that would, I think it's safe to say, change your life forever when you wrote Some Kind of Wonderful. Paint that picture for us in terms of both where you were and how you came up with the song. And I guess for that matter, did you write the whole thing right away, or was it just a hook first and later lyrics and or melody? Just share that part of what is music history with us.
Well, the way the song came about is I was a house part of the Soul Brothers Six. As I was the lead singer and songwriter for the Soul Brothers Six. We were a house band at a club. We played every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And there was a young lady that we met, and she fell in love with me. I mean, I liked her, but I was not looking to marry anybody. She wanted to get married. I was focusing on my career. So the group met a guy from Philadelphia that wanted to manage us, and he invited us to come to Philadelphia to start recording. She packed me a lunch, and she was hoping that I would come back, and, you know, she was really serious about me. But I was serious about my music.
This is when you were in Rochester, yes?
Exactly.
Okay.
So when she packed me the lunch and I was getting ready to leave, I was feeling sad about, you know, I had to leave. I knew she wanted more out of life. She wanted me to be her husband, which I was not. That was not in my frame of mind. But I did think a lot of her, and I said to her, "You know what? You're some kind of wonderful." I said, "I'm going to write a song about you." So when we left Rochester and I ate the lunch that she had packed for me, I started writing on the bag. And it said, the first lines, "I don't need a whole lot of money." That was because at that point in time in my life, I was broke. I said, "I don't need a big, fine car." Those lyrics were written because the car that we were riding in you could look through the floor and see the highway. But I said, I got everything that a man could want. I got more than I was referring to her. I wrote the song. We recorded it in Philadelphia. We got a deal with Atlantic Records, and it was released. Now, another thing would play a part in it in terms of the notoriety of the song, because Soul Brother Six were African-American back then. My song was only played on black radio stations.
Mm.
And the way it became known all over the world, basically, was after Grand Funk Railroad recorded it in 1974. But prior to them recording it, because they were a white group, it was played on all white radio stations.
Mm.
What a lot of people don't know, that after the first recording of Some Kind of Wonderful, the second recording of it was by an artist out of Philadelphia, another African-American artist called Johnny C. He did a version of it. That was the second version. And then Grand Funk Railroad, who liked a lot of black music, they listened to black music all the time, they noticed that every time they played Some Kind of Wonderful, the dance floor would fill up. So their manager said to them, you guys need to do a cover version of this song.
Mm.
So in 1974, Grand Funk Railroad recorded it. And because they were a white group, it was played on all white radio stations all over the U.S. and all over the Canada. So that's why when you speak to someone, especially if they're white, and you talk about Some Kind of Wonderful, they think it was Grand Funk Railroad who first recorded
it. Yeah. Wow.
The song was 7 years old when Grand Funk Railroad recorded it.
Well, I have two questions for you. Number one is backing up to when you said that after that incident with the contest where they left the intercom turned on, you said you moved to Rochester, New York. Why Rochester? How did you go from West Virginia? Why did you pick Rochester, New York?
I had a cousin that had moved to Rochester, and he'd come back to visit. He was in the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And so after he got out of the war, he moved to Rochester. I don't know why he chose Rochester, but that's where he moved. And he would come back periodically to visit, and he always looked very successful. And we all thought he had a, you know, his big home in New York. And so when I got ready to leave West Virginia, the only place I knew to go was Rochester, New York.
The other follow-up question I had for you is when you're talking now about 7 years had gone by before Grand Funk Railroad recorded Some Kind of Wonderful, had you already met that person that you referred to very early on when we started our conversation, and you said, fortunately, you were blessed to meet somebody who was honest that kind of taught you the ropes? Because what I'm thinking of is back in 1974, that was a case of someone else taking your song and look at where it went. Did you already know back then that, okay, I need to make sure I'm protected here, that I get the rights to this song?
No, 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 no. Well, let me I'll give you the information on that. Right after I recorded Some Kind of Wonderful, after the group recorded Some Kind of Wonderful and was released, the word got out about John Ellison being a great songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
There was a record label and a publishing company in Philadelphia that heard about me, and they wanted to, they sent for me. It was a record label called Fillet of Soul, Jamie Guyden Music.
Mm-hmm.
And so the owner, his name was Harold Lipsius, and he wanted me to sign with him as a songwriter. And he, being the person he was, he offered me an advance of $1,000 to sign with him.
Hmm.
I was going to sign the contract, and he said, no, I don't want you to sign it. He said, I want you to take it first and let your attorney look at it. And if you like what's on it, then you come back and we'll sign the agreement. So I said to him, well, I don't have an attorney and I don't need to have anybody look at it. You're paying me $1,000. And he said, no, he said, I don't work that way. He said, I don't want you to come back in 5 or 10 years and say I took advantage of
you. Wow.
And so I said, well, I don't have an attorney. He said, well, okay, well, I'm going to explain this contract to you, and I'll explain to you what I'm asking you. and what I'm offering you. He said, if you sign with me, he said, you'll make a lot of money. He said, I will make a lot of money too. He said, but because nobody does anything for nothing. So he said, but I will put your music all over the world and you will make a lot of money off of it. So he showed me the ropes of how to protect myself, how to register my music. And I'm still working with this family right today.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow, what a great story. Yeah. What a great story.
And that's why I've never had to work, because I receive royalties from all over the world from my music.
Sure, sure. So thinking about writing that song all those years ago and, say, this new album that you released in January but probably wrote songs for last year, has songwriting itself changed from 1967 to now? And if so, in what way? Or is it, no, Bruce, songwriting has not changed. It still boils down to having a good hook and writing the best song you can.
Yeah, it's still the same.
Because you said that, you know, it became known in 1967 that John Ellison is a songwriter, that it sounds like, you know, people were probably in hot pursuit of you to see, wow, this Some Kind of Wonderful is a great song. What else do you have?
Oh, well, in terms of, I've always been with a label. After the group disbanded in 1969, I actually signed a contract with Jamie Music, which is the company that I'm referring to. The person, Harold Lipsius, he passed away in 1996, but I'm still involved with the label. They still have a huge catalog of me. Actually, I just received a call from them last week regarding a song that I wrote like 30 years ago.
Wow.
That it's being considered for a movie.
Wow.
Right now.
Wow. Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So have you primarily throughout your career, John, written songs alone, or do you do a lot of co-writes?
No, I've never done any co-writing.
Wow.
No, everything that I've written, I've arranged, it's all me.
But as impressive as that is, I have to imagine that you have met so many people throughout your career who I'm sure that a number of times have probably said to you, John, I love your work. We should write together sometime. So how have you
how have you
responded to those?
I've responded to them. I'm a very point-blank person. Not that I have anything against writing with anyone, but if I come up with an idea about a song, I don't need anyone to collaborate with me on that song.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know exactly how I want it to go.
But in the case of Some Kind of Wonderful, you said that you were writing on the lunch bag in the car, but the other members of the band were in the car with you. So you just internalized all this and just kept quiet and wrote that yourself on the bag? You didn't ask for their input?
See, I'm not being egotistical here. I have a natural talent for writing and I don't need any help. And when I'm doing a song, so I'll explain Some Kind of Wonderful. When I finished writing Some Kind of Wonderful, when we arrived in Philadelphia, and there was this DJ that was going to come over and listen to us, and I told the guys, I said, okay, I got this song that I want to teach you guys. I want you to listen, follow my directions here.
Mm-hmm.
I told the bass man, I said, okay, I want you to play the bass like this. Boom, 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 boom. I said, that's how I want the bass to go. The drummer, I said, okay, drummer, you follow it with a shuffle like. Boom, 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 boom. Then I started giving them, and I told them when to come in with the backup vocals.
Wow.
The Some Kind of Wonderful, it was all me. Everything
wow.
you hear about Some Kind of Wonderful is me.
Wow.
The arrangements of the bass, the drums, I played both parts of the guitar. I laid two tracks down for the guitar. It's all me, and I taught the backup vocals what to say. I do this on all of my music.
And I would think that for a song like that, being that you had just left her, you just got in the car after she gave you the lunch bag, you know, you're the one that was in that relationship with her, not the other band members. So I can see where you would say, I don't need any help writing this because I'm the one that's getting in the car and driving away from this girl. And she was some kind of wonderful. So I know the emotional feelings that I want to convey in this song. The other guys don't know the way that I felt.
Exactly. And that holds true with any song that I write. There's a story behind it. I'm the one that's telling the story, and I know how I want it to go.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, fantastic. So for people that don't know, you don't just do music. You're an entrepreneur, a spice business, a book, a documentary. Now we're hearing about motivational speaking. And then, of course, as we already talked about, you continue to write and record music and perform live. Is there a point, John, when you will say, I'm done?
Yeah, when I'm 6 feet under. The word retirement is not in my vocabulary.
Mm. Okay, but tell me this. Is there anyone in your family that's following in your footsteps?
Yes, I have. I have two grandchildren. Since you're in Florida, are you familiar with the Manatee Performing Arts Center in Bradenton?
I am.
Okay, well, I have two granddaughters that perform in the musicals there. And actually, I performed at the Manatee Performing Arts Center on December 30th.
Ah.
They were with me. They sang in my show that evening. But they're amazing. My youngest daughter is an amazing, amazing singer. At one point in time, we started recording, but she got married and she started a family. So she sort of put her singing career on the back burner. But we also, there's a movie that I did the soundtrack for in 2001. I arranged and I wrote all the songs in the movie soundtrack with the exception of Amazing Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie is called The Rev, R-E-V. It's like the Reverend, and I'm co-starring in the movie. It was a made-for-television movie. It's right now you can still watch it on them. I don't know if it's Netflix, but
one of the streaming platforms.
Yeah, one of those streaming platforms. You can watch it right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Rev, and the entire musical soundtrack was written and arranged. Everything was me.
Wow, wow. So I want to go back to early in the interview, you told us the story about the policeman who broke your guitar at the train station. And then later, when you told the story about what you heard over the intercom, you said, I'm not going to let this defeat me. So
Right. Thinking
back to those times when you were young, could you ever have imagined, as driven as you were and committed to, I don't care about these two incidents, I'm still going to play music. At the same time, could you ever have imagined that one day you would, or that you could, be a Grammy nominee, get inducted into halls of fame, get lifetime achievement awards, and so on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was never any doubt in my mind that
wow.
I was not going to achieve my goals. I'll give you an example. When I was in Rochester, when I first arrived in Rochester, I had to get a job, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned to you, I've only worked probably a year and a half out of my entire life on a 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this particular job I had, I was working in a restaurant washing dishes and keeping the floors clean. Well, these two gentlemen walked in. This is probably about a couple of months after I had arrived in Rochester. And it was snowing. It was the floor was being tracked up as people walked into the restaurant. And I had to add my mop and I was out on the floor, keeping the floor, you know, clean.
Mm-hmm.
These two gentlemen walked in, and one said to me, he said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to track up your floor. And I said, don't worry about it, sir. I said, I'm not here anyway. And he said, pardon me? I said, I'm not here. And he looked at his friend. He says, if you're not here, where are you? I said, sir, I'm on stage in front of thousands of people singing. And he looked at the other one and they laughed. He said, well, if that's where you are, good luck. And he because that's where I was in my mind. I was always where I was going. That's been my whole life.
I see.
I'm never living in the present. I'm in the future.
Wow. Wow.
That's why I have accomplished everything that I've done. And I don't let negativity get in my way. That's why I became a motivational speaker. And because I tell people, Bruce, as long as you believe in yourself and you believe in God, there is nothing and no one that can stop you from achieving your goals. Absolutely no one. I've lived on faith all my life. And I can tell you stories that's beyond your wildest dreams. How God, if you trust him and believe him, and you really, truly, you don't just talk the talk, but you walk the walk, as they say. I'm a person, I believe 110% that I'm protected and that I will achieve anything that I go after. I will accomplish it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. We are going to close today with another track of John's entitled Wake Up Call. This is not on the new album that just came out in late January. Audience, there is an intro to this spoken word of just over 90 seconds and then the music. But John, before I play that, tell the audience first what this is that they're about to hear, if you would, please. Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call is the reality of this country that we call the United States. And I tell people all the time, this country is not united. I asked a guy at customs one time, I was crossing the border, and I asked him, I said, do you really know the meaning of the word united? I said, the word united should be just removed from the states and just call it the States of America, because this country has never been united. I hope one day we will become united, but it's not. And the song, if when you play Wake Up Call, listen to the words of that song. And I will just say a few words. To understand the black man's fight, you must first take a look at the black man's plight. To understand our state of mind, turn the pages of history, and that's where you will find where this land of the free in the home of the brave is where they brought the black man and made him a slave. And freedom was just a dream that he took to his grave.
Wow.
So that's the beginning of the song.
Wow. Bravo. Bravo.
And truer words were never spoken.
John, amazing, amazing conversation. Thank you. So wonderful to meet you. Congratulations on the new album, on all your success, on the speaking career that sounds like it's off to a great start. I really appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thank you for having me, Bruce.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to legendary singer, songwriter, guitar player John Ellison. Do visit his official website at johnellisonmusic.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. His new album, Some Kind of Wonderful, by John Ellison and Soul Brothers 6, came out in late January. On the music page of his website, there are links to purchase it from Apple Music or Amazon, or to stream it from the likes of Spotify and SoundCloud. At the top of johnellisonmusic.com, look for the logos to link over to John's social media platforms so you can follow him on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I did all three of those myself, and I'm sure that he would appreciate you doing the same. Keep up with John online for details on where and when you can see him perform live or to attend one of his motivational speeches. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with John and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once. by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 532. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another track from John Ellison. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Wake Up Call.
My grandfather was born a slave in 1854. He died in 1941, passing on a dream. His oldest son was hanged in 1936 in Georgia for refusing to work overtime and for standing up for his rights. In 1955, a racist white man slit my brother's throat in a hospital in West Virginia where he worked. He was never charged. In 1969, I was hit in the left eye in Dayton, Ohio, with a beer bottle by a racist white group. I was blind for over a year. In 1971, I was refused medical treatment for third-degree burns and not allowed in a hospital in Alexandria, Virginia, because of the color of my skin. In 1998, my nephew's neck was broken by the police in Bluefield, West Virginia. It paralyzed him from his neck down. He was only 18 years old. The police were never charged. My father died in 1965, hoping his children's life would be better than his. We are tired of singing the songs, "We Shall Overcome." We are tired of the "I Forgive You." We are tired of the injustice. We want justice now. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. To understand the black man's fight, you must first take a look at the black man's plight. To understand our state of mind, turn the pages of history, and there you'll find that this land of the free and home of the brave is where you brought us and made us your slave, and freedom was a dream that we took to our grave. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. At some point you said we were free, but this has never been our reality in your sweet land of liberty. This applied to you, but not to me. We're still waiting to be set free. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. We salute your flag, but for us it's a lie. We died for this country. Somebody tell me why. In this country of freedom and equality, we've been treated like we were the enemy. It's a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call. What we've endured is hard to define. We have a permanent scar in our hearts and mind. But through it all, we still stand tall, and we refuse to give up, and we refuse to fall. It's a wake-up call. We'll never be silent, we'll remain outspoken. We're a symbol of endurance and we'll never be broken. Our ancestors died passing on the dream that one day we'd be free, as impossible as it seemed. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. We've held on to our dreams when all seemed lost. Freedom for us has been a very high cost. Things have changed, new laws have been passed, but in the race for equality, we still come in last. This is a wake-up call, America. This is a wake-up call. You have no clue what it's like having the color of my skin, because the journey into my world is a place you've never been. If you were born white, you are born free.
You'll never know what it's like to be black like me.
This is a wake up call, America. This is a wake up call. This is a wake up call, America. This is a wake up call. This is a brand new day. Pay attention to what I say. This is a wake up call. This is a wake up call.